يقولون سلام سلام ولا هنا سلام.
You're listening to Middle East Analysis, a podcast series from the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales. Hello and welcome to a special Middle East Analysis. Now the topic today is the Palestinian statehood bid at the UN, and as such we're going to split our podcasts into two parts. So today's podcast is very much going to be looking ahead to Friday the 23rd of September, when the bid for statehood will actually be formally looked at the United Nations in New York. And then, of course, the key time afterwards when we can actually analyse exactly how this will play out and exactly what the framework might be. Now, in order to help us do this, we're joined by Dr. Harry Hagopian, who was a former Assistant General Secretary of the Middle East Council of Churches, but of course is uniquely qualified for this very topic. He was a Secretary of the Jerusalem Interchurch Committee and, interestingly, took part in the Oslo Accords of 1993, which set up the Palestinian Authority. Harry, how are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. Big days ahead, James.
Huge days, and that's a pretty massive intro, and you've clearly been very much involved in these processes of the past, so plenty to say, no doubt.
My involvement in the Middle East and North Africa region actually began with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, so that was where the genesis lay, and then after that it graduated to many of the other countries in the MENA region. But the initial interest politically as well as ecumenically was with Israel-Palestine and the Holy Land, and then the rest of the MENA region.
Well, looking forward to hearing your views as always. Well, let's start with a bit of conflict here. In terms of the US, which can be a sticking point in such things, we've heard from Hillary Clinton things that might not surprise us, such as the road to peace goes through Jerusalem and Ramallah, not New York. And then we hear from Susan Rice, who's the ambassador to the UN from the US, saying there's no shortcut, no magic wand. If there was, then we'd have waved it already. And she goes on to say that this is worse than a diversion and will set back the process of getting the two parties around the table. It all sounds quite bleak, Harry.
Well, it might sound bleak from an American perspective, James, and I think there is so much paranoia within the American-Israeli camps at the moment about the statehood bid that the Palestinians are trying to apply at the United Nations. I might not disagree with the Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's statement in the sense that any negotiation has to go through Jerusalem and Ramallah, which clearly she means the Israeli government and the Palestinian Authority. I would probably disagree more robustly with Susan Rice's analysis that this is a distraction, as both she and her president Barack Obama said. The reason I disagree with it is very simple. The Palestinians could have applied for this membership 10 years ago. They could have done it 5 years ago. They could have done it 5 months ago. In fact, in 1988, when Yasser Arafat was the chairman of the Palestinian Liberation Organization, there was a unilateral declaration of independence, which attracted a large range of recognitions by different countries, largely from Latin America, Africa, and the Arab world. However, the reason why they haven't done it till now is firstly, because they have given negotiations the first option. They have hoped that with negotiations it would be possible to reach an accord, a peace resolution, a settlement between Israel and the Palestinians over territory that was occupied in 1967. And when I say occupied in 1967, I'm not using semantics or rhetorics. I'm using the language of international law. And that would have been their priority. It was not their priority, and now they have shifted to the UN track for two reasons. One, because President Barack Obama, both in his Cairo address in 2009 and yet again last year at the United Nations General Assembly, said that 2011 we will see two states, the Palestinian state and the state of Israel, coexisting sovereignly and independently next to each other. So he himself set a deadline. And secondly, and much more importantly in my opinion, I think after 20 years of negotiations between Israel and the Palestinians, the Palestinian people and the Arab world at large, at a moment where the whole MENA region is in an uprising, where the people are now speaking more than their leaders, and where the levers of power are changing quite dramatically, the Palestinians have realized that there isn't really much hope in the road to Jerusalem or to the road to Ramallah, because they will be checkmated every time that there is an attempt to a peace resolution. So they're trying to up the ante by going to the United Nations.
Let's talk a bit about the president of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas. Has he got his people on side here in terms of Fatah and Hamas, or are there problems from that perspective?
I think he has got his people on board in the sense that this is a strategic decision that was made by the Palestinian Authority, supported by the PLO, to go toward the United Nations and try to apply for this statehood bid. Now, in terms of Hamas, Hamas is a very interesting political animal. They are, as you well know, quite independent from the Palestinian Authority and even the PLO in terms of their orientations. However, on this one, they're actually playing it very cleverly. They are neither opposing nor supporting, and they're letting President Mahmoud Abbas, the president of the authority, to do all the running, and they will wait and see whether there are any benefits to be reaped or whether this will basically fall flat on its face as an initiative. But also the people of Palestine. I am more interested in the people. We are at the moment experiencing a huge range of uprisings and popular revolts and even revolutions in some of the MENA countries. And the people are talking. The people of Palestine are tired. The people of Palestine want their freedom. They want their dignity. They want their rights. And I don't think anybody could deny them their self-determination at the moment. In fact, both President Obama and the European Union have time and again stressed that they have the right to a state. So why are we creating so much paranoia and so much fear is a question that, of course, has political answers, but it is also amusing.
Well, let's be honest, we don't particularly know which way this is going to go, and maybe it's best not to speculate. But at this stage, what I want to ask you is this, you know, is this just a showpiece, or might it make a political difference? Will it lead to peace, or is it really a non-entity?
James, to answer that question, let me very briefly suggest to you and to our listeners that there are two ways that the Palestinian Authority might go with this statehood bid. It might go to the Security Council directly, which means that it would submit an application to the Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, who would then consider it. But the problem with the Security Council, as many of our listeners know, is that there is the fear of an American veto. And if the U.S. vetoes it, then it is redundant. Now, interestingly enough, a lot of the people and a lot of the political analysts are talking about the American veto. What they also do not realize is that there is another way to scupper this initiative at the United Nations Security Council, and that is by making sure that it doesn't get the 9 out of the 15 votes of the members of the Security Council, so that if the Americans and some of the Europeans ensure that the application does not have 9 supporting votes out of the 15 in the Security Council, then it no longer needs an American veto because it will have been scuppered. If that were the case, the second option for the Palestinians is to go directly to the General Assembly and have a vote at the General Assembly. 2/3 majority of the people who would vote, in other words, the actual votes, would make it also happen. Now, what's the difference, you tell me, between the two options? The difference is that if the Security Council recommends and approves this application for statehood, then Palestine becomes a sovereign state of Palestine in the eyes of the United Nations and under international law. If they stop it, or if the Palestinians feel that they will not get that recognition and go the General Assembly way, then what would happen is that it would basically be upping its status to a non-member state of the United Nations, which means it would be very much something like the Vatican and the Holy See. Now, what's the difference? The difference is that you will not still be a sovereign state as you will have been if you had gone to the Security Council. However, the difference between that and what they have now is that they would be able to join many of the UN committees and also perhaps petition the International Court of Justice in The Hague in terms of issues of occupation and discrimination in Palestinian lands according to the Fourth Geneva Conventions. And I think that is one of the reasons why the Israelis are so opposed to this bid. But I have my suspicions, actually, that we might get a surprise. I am not yet 100% sure that this is all done and dusted and that the Palestinian leadership has decided that the UN is the only way forward. I think they are actually upping the ante. They're applying pressure, but that they would probably be willing to change their minds. If the West, if the quartet, which includes the United Nations, Russia, European Union, and the US, were to come out with a credible, practical, feasible plan or roadmap, unlike the previous roadmaps, which pretty much have been nothing more than ink on paper, to force the Israeli hand into negotiating with the Palestinians for a settlement. If that blueprint were to come about, and there are efforts at making this happen as we speak, then I believe that the Palestinians would desist from going the UN way and would be happy to go with negotiations.
I still don't understand the significance of what would happen if this doesn't go anywhere.
Well, if this doesn't go anywhere, it would be more of a sense of disappointment more than anything else. At the end of the day, the main issues have to be thrashed out between the Palestinians and the Israelis. On that, I'm quite convinced. Now, there are many, many commentators and political analysts and very good ones, the likes of Dr. Azmi Bishara and others, who would say that negotiations have led us nowhere in the last 15 years. There is no point even of talking about negotiations, that if this route of recognition of a statehood bid falls through and doesn't happen, then the Palestinians should look at different strategic choices. And of course, different strategic choices also means that there might be the possibility of resistance to the occupation, the way we're seeing in Libya, Syria, Tunisia, Egypt, and many other countries of the MENA region. So in a sense, there will be a very big sense of disappointment, but it will also show to the world about who is with the rights of the people and who is against the rights of the people. So I think it's a very interesting tactical move, but it is only tactical at the moment, and I would like to see the strategy develop behind it, and that probably we will only see when we have our next podcast, when we discuss it ex post facto, after the initiative, if it were to happen at the UN, because by then we would have the resolution, we would have the application bid, and we could read exactly what the Palestinians want to get out of it.
Well, time certainly will tell on that. Now, Harry, I've got to ask you this. The Holy See has mandated, as you well know, the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales to look after what's called the Holy Land Coordination. So it's a region, obviously, that we're very interested in and very passionate about. It's an initiative that has the Catholic Church globally standing in solidarity. Yet in these different countries, politically, there are different decisions being made, which obviously comes to bear on the Church as much as anything else. Are we all in it together? And if we are, what can we do as the Catholic Church?
What you said is absolutely true, James. The Holy Land Coordinating is basically a collection of different Catholic bishops' conferences across Europe, North America, and other countries, which basically comes together, mandated by the Holy See, by the Vatican, to try and stand in solidarity with and be supportive of the Christians of this larger region. This is why here in the Catholic Conference, we have worked so closely with the Christian churches, Catholic but also non-Catholic, in the Holy Land. In other words, in Israel, in Jordan, in Palestine, but we also work with Lebanon, we work with Syria, we work with Iran, we work with other countries. Lebanon is a very good example. All this is to try and support the Christians and their structures. Now, the policy of the Holy See has clearly been that it supports a two-state solution. And that is what it would aspire to see happening, coming from negotiations and dialogue. This application bid does not change that. In my view, this application reinforces the necessity to have negotiations and to have dialogue. So I would suspect that the Holy See and the conferences of churches across the whole world who are involved with the MENA region, with the Middle East and North Africa, would not only be supportive of it vocally, but would lend their moral authority and their credibility to try and help the local church. Because remember, there are Arab Christians in the Middle East and there are Arab Palestinian Christians as well. It would lend its moral authority and its credibility to make sure that those Palestinians, be they Muslim or Christian, also eventually have their rights acknowledged by the world community so that they eventually become a state with its own borders, with its own rights and with its own resources.
Well, Harry, I'm finding this fascinating, and it's clearly a pivotal moment, whether it's tactics, whether it's going back to the negotiating table, whether it's a sovereign state or a non-member state. It's certainly it could shake down in a number of different ways, and it'd be good to talk to you again, obviously.
It's going to be very interesting, because it could go, as you said, in so many different ways. I do not think that we yet can say with all confidence that we know where it's going or what the outcome would be. But what we can say with confidence that it has kicked up a lot of dust, and I think that is good, because at the end of the day, if we remember that the occupation started in 67, so we have had decades and decades of inertia, and it is time that we start moving. And interestingly enough, and I'll conclude on this, James, Tzipi Livni, the opposition leader in the Israeli Knesset, only this week said that it is the fault of the Prime Minister Netanyahu that we have not yet managed to reach a solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And she further added that the issue would not have happened under her watch. So interestingly enough, settlements are a key issue to this. The psychology is a key issue to this. But at the end of the day, I think what it really focuses on are the freedoms that Palestinians feel they have to have. And it is one that we should all support, because at the end of the day, we are all equals in this world.
Absolutely. Well, it's great to have your perspective, Harry, as always. Someone uniquely qualified there, Dr. Harry Hagopian, international lawyer, former Assistant General Secretary of the Middle East Council of Churches, and as I say, has produced a great body of work on the Palestinian-Israel situation, and you can get a good look at all that work if you visit www.epictarsis.net, Dr. Harry Hagopian's website. Alternatively, stick with us and have a look at www.catholicchurch.org.uk/Middle East.